The best variety on your radio, 88.3 Southern FM.
Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. Well, this evening's topic is water. Water on the moon and water on Mars.
Sapore di sale, sapore di mare, che hai sulla pelle, che hai sulle labbra, quando esci dall'acqua e ti vieni a sdraiare vicino a me.
Sapore di sale, the full song later in this evening's The Space Show. Well, as Australia endures a drought and Europe turns from green to brown, we talk water. Solid water on the moon. James Kirby joins us from RMIT University to discuss his plan to get water ice from the moon. And then the amazing apparent discovery of liquid water on Mars. We have the announcement direct from the headquarters of the Italian Space Agency. Water on the moon. Now, by water, I mean not liquid water, but solid water. Yes, some most people just call it ice. And now we're going to hear from Celine Dion. Joining us in the studio now is James Kirby. He's an undergraduate student at RMIT University in Melbourne, and he aims to help Celine Dion with her love troubles. Welcome to the Space Show, James.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the background to that song, Water from the Moon, is back in the Apollo days. Tell us about it, please.
Well, back in the Apollo days, they didn't find any water on the moon, or they didn't find any evidence.
Okay, and that was in 1969-72, the lunar missions. Then Celine recorded this song in 1992. So as it was then, getting water from the moon seemed to be an impossible task.
That's right, yep.
But things have changed since then. Run us through some of the things that have happened since that song.
Yeah, of course. So we had the Lunar Prospector in 1998, and that estimated about 3 billion tonnes of water at the lunar poles. And since then, we've had Chandrayaan number 1 and the LCROSS and LRO missions as well, which have also proven the existence of water on the moon.
Okay, so Celine was accurate at the time, but she's been sort of, it's not so impossible now.
That's it, yes.
Okay, now where is this ice located?
So there's evidence of ice at the lunar poles in regions called the permanently shadowed regions, which are areas which don't get any direct sunlight at any point in time.
So the Earth's poles do get sunlight.
That's right, yep.
But there are... The moon's got a different orientation, hasn't it, to the ecliptic, and therefore there are some areas on the moon which I understand get sunlight all the time and other areas which are dark all the time.
This is correct, and they're found just at the lunar north and south poles in some of these craters.
Okay, and you've got a plan to get some of that ice?
We do, yes.
Okay, what's your plan called?
So the plan and the project that we put together was called Rhabdomancer, which is actually the old-fashioned term for a diviner of water.
Okay.
So we thought that was quite fitting.
I'd say. All right. Now, just before we get into discussing how your mission would work, there's another piece of information we need, and that's the Lunar Gateway. What is that?
So the Lunar Gateway is a... I guess, a space station that is currently being built to orbit the moon in a certain type of orbit, where it'll come close at one point of the orbit and it'll move much further away at the furthest point.
Okay, but it's not definite that that thing will actually happen.
No, there's a few bits and pieces being made for it at the moment, but it's not, you're right, it's not definite.
Okay. So your plan then is to, what, send a sampler from the Earth or from this space station?
So our plan is actually to use this gateway, this space station, so that we can efficiently sample certain areas of the moon and direct that back to this space station, which will then come back towards Earth.
Ah, so you will bring the samples back to Earth eventually?
We will bring them back eventually, but it's sort of a staging ground at the moment, this space station.
Okay. Now, how easy is it to land on the moon?
Well, if you're talking about these permanently shadowed regions, it's extremely difficult because you can't really see what you're doing.
Yes. Of course, the manned missions, they were able to do it by eyeballs with a bit of help from radar. Unmanned missions, they generally use radar and dead reckoning. But, yeah, it's dark. How would you do it?
So we designed a system that had a number of sensors on board, including things such as LIDAR. But we're also using this manned gateway to teleoperate the vehicles which land on the moon as well, which reduces that communication time between them.
Do you know exactly where the ice is on the moon? Okay, we know it's at the poles generally, but do you know it's in this crater or that spot?
We do have a fairly good idea as to where it is, and the crater that we have the most information about is one called Cabeus, which is on the South Pole.
How big is Cabeus?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, sorry.
Okay. A couple of hundred kilometres across, probably, something like that. Yeah. And if you landed, how would you know you're in the right place inside Cabeus? I mean, would you have the opportunity to sort of hop from one place to another and sort of try sampling in different spots before you launch back into space?
Yeah, of course. So we've got a rough idea from something called a neutron spectrometer as to where in that crater the water is most likely to be. The mission that we put together was not the standard rover design, which is normally used or proposed in missions such as this, but we had a hopping system which had the ability to land in certain areas of this crater and then to jump to different locations as well using propulsive maneuvers.
Okay. Why wouldn't you use a wheeled rover like the two... Well, the rovers on Mars that are operating at the moment, or the Apollo lunar rovers or Lunokhod, they were very successful. Why can't you use a rover in that sense?
There's a couple of reasons. One is it's very dark and the terrain is unknown. So when you're talking about rovers, one of the issues that we have with rovers is that they can quite easily get stuck in certain situations. When you have something which can jump across the surface, you don't necessarily get stuck quite as easily. The other reason is really from a statistical standpoint. So we're interested in looking at water on the moon and trying to quantify how much is there, because if there is a significant amount, that is an important staging ground for further missions. So by being able to jump a large distance in between the samples that you take, we can build up much quicker a map as to how much water is in that area that we're looking at.
So you land this thing on, in the crater.
Yep.
You sample, you maybe hop around a bit to get different samples. How are the samples collected?
So they're collected using a specialized ultrasonic drill. We actually take two samples at each location that we hop to. And the hops, then they're not small hops. We, in one configuration, we actually hop 3 kilometres in between each site. And in the second configuration, we can launch, we can hop 6 kilometres in between each site. So.
Oh, okay. So it would look quite spectacular, except it's in the dark.
It would.
Right. And then you blast off.
We do.
And head to this lunar gateway.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, and explain again why you go to the gateway and not blast straight back to Earth.
Of course. So going back to that idea of being able to quantify how much is on the moon, the system that we've proposed and we've put the development plans for, it's a system which can be reused. So by being able to go backwards and forwards between this gateway and the moon, we can hop to a number of different craters, we can test all of those locations, and we can build up a number of samples at that gateway, which only need to come back once the gateway is resupplied.
Right. So you store those samples.
That's right.
Presumably. Will you let them melt, or are you going to try and keep them refrigerated?
No, we've got some cryogenic cooling on board, something called a dewar, which stores six samples in a single dewar, and those samples can stay in there indefinitely as long as you have the power supply to run those. Mm.
And everyday language, a dewar is basically a thermos flask.
Yes.
Yeah. Sophisticated one, but...
It is, yes.
Right. So you keep the samples on the gateway, but there are humans on the gateway.
Yes.
There aren't now, but there would be. So they can sort of shove them in the freezer and keep them there.
Yeah, and I wouldn't see...
What about analysing them on the gateway? Any chance that they might do that?
I couldn't see any reason why they wouldn't be able to analyse them on the gateway in some capacity. So there's certain aspects of this design that were put together that were dictated by the competition that we were part of. And so that was one of them, is that they had to be stored at the gateway and then returned to the Earth.
Hmm. And you did this design as part of a team?
I did, yes.
And tell us about the team.
Yeah, of course. So I was part of a team from RMIT University, and we were working in collaboration with a number of international universities, including one from Korea, one from Hong Kong, and two from the US. And altogether, we put this proposal into a competition called RASCAL, which is an annual competition run by NASA, a mission design competition.
Oh, right. And how did they judge it?
So we had a panel of about 10 judges from some of the big aerospace companies in the US, and we needed to put a number of reports together to make sure that the plan was progressing. And they cut off teams at each of those points, and then the final teams were invited to present in Florida at a forum there.
Oh, okay. Did you get a trip to Florida?
We did get a trip to Florida. It was fantastic.
Oh, wow. And whereabouts in Florida was it?
It was a place called Cocoa Beach, which is...
Oh, right. Next to the Kennedy Space Center.
Just next to Kennedy Space Center.
Canaveral.
That's it.
Did you see any rocket launches while you were there?
We didn't, unfortunately, no. I think that was the week after we left, but wasn't to be.
Okay. And you got to meet some of the other teams that were in this competition, I presume?
We did. There were some fantastic proposals there across. So it wasn't just lunar ice. We were looking at four different themes. Three were actually Mars-based, and we'd chosen to compete in this lunar ice challenge.
Oh, well. And how did you go?
Fantastic. We put a really good proposal together. We came, we didn't place, but the other teams there, very, very competitive, and it was, yeah.
Oh, so you're competing with the best of the best.
We were competing with the best of the best, that's right.
Okay. So you, where does the proposal go from here?
So every year, RASCAL runs this competition, and they select the problems that NASA are working on currently, and they put those problems out to the university community. So this is all part of their ideas cycle, I guess, where they're validating some of the concepts that they're looking at as well, and to see if students can come up with any novel ideas that perhaps haven't been thought of before.
Have there been any other missions to the poles of the moon?
There has. So there's one that we were particularly interested in, which was the LCROSS mission, and that crashed into Cabeus Crater, which was the first one that we selected as well. And this is really one of the main reasons that we selected that as the primary location, because we have a large amount of data from this LCROSS mission, which was actually a probe which crashed into that crater and measured the amount of dust and water particles that might have been coming off there.
Now, you're an undergraduate student at RMIT University, I understand. What are your studies at the university?
So I study business and robotics as well.
Oh, okay.
Robots and space.
And has this been part of your course, or is it an extra?
It's not. It's definitely been an extra. And RMIT encourages that we undertake these extra things as well.
Okay, so it will go onto your CV, presumably.
Absolutely. It's been a fantastic experience.
Well, James, thank you for joining us on the Space Show.
Thanks, Andrew, for having me.
And we've got a song here. We mentioned the LCROSS mission, and we've got a song here about the LCROSS mission. We just got a little clip from it.
Like finding water on the moon.
Well, water on the moon. Now, we're going to hear about water on Mars in a few moments. You're listening to The Space Show on Southern FM. Now, Mars Express is a European Space Agency spacecraft that has been orbiting Mars since 2004. Aboard is a radar called MARSIS that sends radio pulses down to Mars and records the reflection off the surface and subsurface. Last Wednesday, soon after the space show handed the airwaves over to the Purple Haze program, a stunning announcement was made at the headquarters of the Italian Space Agency in Rome. So stunning, the Age newspaper the next day ran the story on its front page, with details on page 10. The MARSIS instrument has detected what appears to be liquid water about 1,500 metres below the ice cap of Mars's south pole. The subterranean lake is 20 kilometres across and is similar to lakes in Antarctica and Greenland. Now, before we cross to the Italian Space Agency, I'd like to ask whether or not, you know, what your reaction was to it, please, James. I put him on the spot here.
Look, it's fantastic news. I think that we've been looking at going to Mars for a long time, and a lot of people have been very Mars-focused, and this just adds another reason to go, I think.
All right. Well, before we get into crossing to the Italian Space Agency, let's hear the song that the Space Agency itself has been using to promote this their finding. And this is Sapore di Sale, and which translated means the taste of salt. And it's by Gino Paoli from 1963.
Sapore di sale, sapore di mare, che hai sulla pelle, che hai sulle labbra, quando esci dall'acqua e ti vieni a sdraiare, vicino a me, vicino a me, sapore di sale. Sapore di mare, un gusto un po' amaro di cose perdute, di cose lasciate lontano da noi, dove il mondo è diverso, diverso da qui, il tempo è dei giorni che passano pigri e lasciano in bocca il gusto del sale, ti butti nell'acqua e mi lasci a guardarti e rimango da solo nella sabbia nel sole, poi torni vicino e ti lasci cadere così nella sabbia e nelle mie braccia, e mentre ti bacio, sapore di sale, sapore di mare. Il tempo è dei giorni che passano pigri e lasciano in bocca il gusto del sale. Ti butti nell'acqua e mi lasci a guardarti e rimango da solo nella sabbia e nel sole. Poi torni vicino e ti lasci cadere così nella sabbia e nelle mie braccia, e mentre ti bacio, sapore di sale, sapore di mare.
Well, I can't imagine that when Gino Paoli recorded that in 1963, it would be used in 2018 to celebrate the finding of water on Mars. Well, the space show had a connection to the Italian Space Agency and recorded the full announcement event. This evening, we have edited the speeches down to around 20 minutes. A public affairs officer opened proceedings.
You are here today to announce the new discovery, a stunning revelation about Mars. Published on Science Magazine, made by a team composed by of researchers Enrico Flamini, Elena Pettinelli, and Roberto Rosei. Belonging to Italian Research Center and the universities, they are here today to present their finding. These are results of a study from the Italian radar MARSIS on board the ESA Mars Express probe. The Italian Space Agency managed its realization from the beginning until today. It stands as one of the greatest successes.
Three scientists were then invited to present their finding and how they made it using the MARSIS instrument. MARSIS, M-A-R-S-I-S, is an acronym for Mars Advanced Radar for Subsurface and Ionospheric Sounding. The three were Enrico Flamini, the chief scientist of the Italian Space Agency in Rome, Elena Pettinelli from the Department of Mathematics and Physics at the University Studio Roma Tre, again in Rome, and Roberto Orsi from the Istituto Nazionale di Astrofisica in Bologna, Italy. And of course, you can tell from my pronunciation, I am not Italian.
We are here today to present you our results and the fact that we have found liquid water in the subsurface of Mars. This is a work that has been done by a team that formed by a lot of people. In fact, the first evidence that water was largely present in the past on Mars last the times of the Viking mission, so almost 40 years ago, when there was the evidence that lakes and rivers, deltas, were present on Mars. Well, for this reason, what we see today, that is a picture in which water is mostly present as ice on the surface, in a north polar caps and in the south polar cap, and also is present as permafrost, so mixed with the soil again in an iced form. And the fact that for sure in the past most of the water has been swept out by the solar wind provided us the idea that, as in other planet, and as in case of the Earth, for example, some of the water that was once present on Mars should have migrated to the subsurface and eventually remain trapped there, possibly since the time when Mars was wet on the surface. So something that is indeed, was this the real question that we had, where the water has gone, where the liquid water has gone, is only in the ice form, is only the one that Mars has lost at a certain point in time, or can be still hidden in the subsurface. And that's the reason why on December 1996, when ESA announced the intention to realize Mars Express, an F mission, a fast mission, low cost, as he proposed to include on the side of the other instruments that were actually belonging to a former mission that was lost, Mars 96, the Soviet Mars 96 mission, to include also a completely novel instrument, never flown before. and with no previous experience in analyzing other planets, but based on a very strong competence that we had in Italy for the radars, and that also we had with our friends on NASA side that supported us in the realization later on. And so is a sounding radar, a low-frequency radar, capable to penetrate into the Martian surface that I want to like to remember this dry and very cold, two essential points that I think later on Elena will explain better, and search for water in the depth. This was our idea. The Mars Express was launched in June 2003, arrived in the same year on Mars, but Mars started to operate only in July 2005, and the reason was that we had to open the antennas. It's 40 meters long booms, very light, but also that during the aperture could have flexed back. I mean, could have opened and then flexing back to the spacecraft. So in principle, could have jeopardized some part of the spacecraft. Then 1 year has been spent by our colleagues at JPL that provided us the antenna to analyze any possible condition that could have jeopardized the Mars Express mission. At the end, it came out that there was no harm, and finally the antenna was open and Mars started to work. Well, Mars was conceived by Professor Johnny Picardi, one of the utmost excellences in Italy and in the world for what concerned the radars, and realized that under ASI management by Thales Alenia Space Italy, while the contribution of JPL and through a NASA agreement, was for the antenna, and from Iowa University for the what concerned the radio frequency receiver. From July 2005, Mars has operated flawlessly, providing an enormous amount of data and the coverage of most of the Martian surface, making a lot of discoveries, for example, the thickness of the South Polar Ice Cap. But Mars was a novel instrument, never flown before, and we have also to discover not only its potentiality, but also how to evolve the processing of its data. And this was maybe the most challenging part.
Introductory part of this discovery, I'm going to show you briefly what is the principle, the physical basis for the measurements. So this will help Roberto to explain the findings of this research. So how a radar work in a simple way. So you have an antenna that sends electromagnetic waves down. When the electromagnetic wave impinges on the surface, can be reflected back, like in this, and a part of the energy penetrate down to another interface and get bounced back and got gathered by the antenna. Okay. So if you have a layer structure like in this case, what you recorded in the antenna, essentially, you measure the two-way travel time, is the time that the impulse takes to arrive to the interface and comes back, and the amplitude of the signal. Big question, why is the radar sounder the best method to look for underground water? Okay, this is, we know this since probably the 50s on the Earth, and I show you this because these are the two extreme but best environment for propagation of the electromagnetic waves at radio frequencies, so in the megahertz on the Earth. One is a very dry environment, and another one is a very cold environment. Essentially, what we would like to have as a material to investigate at depth, what we would like to have is an electromagnetic wave that impinges on the surface, entering the second medium, and propagate without attenuation, so with the minimum attenuation possible. So we have to search for areas, for example, on Mars, where this technique can be successfully applied. And there are several areas on Mars where we can apply the radar, of course, and that's why it was designed and made. One is some dry areas in some part of Mars, and the other important part are the polar caps. And we know that the polar caps, we knew before Mars start to collect data, that the polar caps are mainly made by water ice with some layers on top of CO2 ice. So this is a great environment to apply the radar, and in particular ice. Ice is a very transparent medium, especially if it's cold and pure to the electromagnetic waves. So it's a good technique to apply to the Martian polar caps, of course. These caps can have some impurities, but definitely the ice is colder than the ice on the Earth. How can we detect liquid water below Martian polar ice using the sounder? We use the technique of radar, but how we in some way guess that below some part of the South Polar Cap in Planum Australis there was water. And we rely on the fact that some physical properties that we can measure with the radar can tell us if it's a rock, if it's saturated rock, if it's sand, or if it's actually water. In the Martian frequency band, which is between 1.8 and 5 megahertz, so you have the radar that send pulses, and pulses bounce back from the surface, penetrate into the ice, and got reflected by the rock or the bottom material below the ice. We can say a few things. Definitely, here there is the surface, so we can know, we can measure quite well from the altitude of the spacecraft. And we see now something different in different areas below the surface. We see this amplitude is low, this is medium, this is very high, okay? So we know that these amplitudes indicate a contrast in the electric properties between the materials above, the material above, and the material below, also in different locations. So we know from other measurements that this is water ice. We knew from before, and there are other experimental measurements that confirm this during the years and the missions. We should say that this is very simple. And what we have to do? We have to analyze these pulses, the feature of these reflected pulses, and trying to find a way to process the data, make modelings, invert the data, to say what is the dielectric property. And this is what we have done with the analysis of the data. Please, Roberto, if you want to.
Thank you, Elena. Good afternoon. It must be obvious by now, because of the explanations given by Elena, that what Mars has been looking for in trying to detect water under the surface of the Martian polar cap is strong reflections from the bottom of the ice. Now, these strong reflections were found already in 2007. But the interesting thing here is that you see the surface reflection as the bright line in the upper part of the radiogram, but also highlighted by an arrow, a strong, bright white line that represent very strong echoes coming from the bottom of the ice, echoes that are stronger than surface echoes, as Elena also pointed out in the case of liquid water. Was that liquid water? At the time, it was concluded that the answer was no. And the reason was that these strong reflections were localized exactly under the residual polar cap, the only part of the southern polar cap that remains frosted white throughout the Martian year. And the reason for that, for the bright reflection, was not really that there was some high permittivity medium under the ice, but rather a residual polar cap was made of CO2 ice, which is a very transparent material. So the reason for the strong echoes was that a lot of energy was able to penetrate into the ice, propagate to the bottom, and produce a comparatively stronger echo simply because the pulsing pinging on the bottom of the ice had a higher energy. And so this essentially concluded the first phase of the search for water on Mars. But not everybody was content with this explanation, and the search continued outside the residual cap. And thanks to the effort of our colleagues, several locations outside the polar cap, the residual polar cap, were mapped in which the strong reflections could be observed. The problem was these areas were very scattered and of a very small extension. Sometimes they seemed to be of the size comparable to the footprint of the radar. And most important, the measurements over the same area in different orbits could yield different results. So the problem was a problem of scale, a problem of resolution, but also a problem of repeatability. So The problem we found out later was due to the fact that we were forced, the instrument was forced to do a lot of onboard processing to reduce the data volume that was sent to the spacecraft. The spacecraft could tolerate only a limited data rate from the experiment. So what was happening in the instrument was Mars is collected 100 or even more pulses, and then it would sum them together and send the result to the spacecraft. The problem was, because these bright spots were relatively small, when you sum together many pulses that come from unremarkable areas in which the reflections from the bottom of the ice are weak, with few pulses in which the reflection is bright, you essentially cancel the strong reflections. They get averaged out. This problem was solved, thanks to the effort of our engineers, by bypassing the onboard processing. And thanks also to the almost, serendipitous choice of adding extra memory chips to the instrument, it was possible to store raw data before they were processed by the spacecraft and downlink them to the ground at a later time. If you do that and you look at the same data at the same area, you get something like this. And now many more details become visible. And now we see the layering much better. We see its lateral continuity. And this time, using these data, we were able to achieve repeatable observations. By flying over the same area, the bright reflector would be there time and again, every single time. That really was the change that propelled us towards our goal, demonstrating the presence of liquid water at Mars. However, that would not be easy. It would take 2 more years after we finished collecting the data before we could make it. The good news was then that we were able to map these bright reflections. However, we could do it over a very limited area because this raw data collection mode limited strongly our capability to observe. We had only short stretches of data collection. And now we found this particular place that was already suspected to harbor, to have bright reflectors in it, which is mapped over a mosaic of the south pole of Mars. So the gray square encompasses a false color map of basal reflectivity produced using the 27 observations we have available and shows in false colors the brightness of the reflection from the bottom. And of course, the blue area, is the one that has the strongest reflections. We have a clearly well-defined maximum that is seen across several orbits every single time. We have, weaker reflectors all around. Some of them approach this central very bright reflector, but only, we are confident of our observations only for the central part because the number of repeated passes over the other areas is smaller. However, when we analyze this area, especially the bright reflector, we find that the topography around it, the basal topography, the topography at the bottom of the ice, is that of a basin. So the bright area is also a local depression, surrounded on three sides by higher terrain. And this also contained, in our opinion, a clue of what the nature of the bright reflector was. Water tends to collect in lower topography. Now, the problem was, as it was found in other places on Mars, that an alternative explanation could be provided by the presence of certain different ices, CO2 ice in particular, on the surface. We had to go through a very extensive effort of modeling what the response of a complex stratigraphy and mostly unknown stratigraphy would be to a radar pulse, depending on what was lying beneath. And to conclude, to summarize the result, this illustration here shows the same radargram that was contained in the previous figure for Mars's, so the eco-power distribution, but also on the right side, you see the corresponding distribution of modeled basal reflectivities. You see that outside the bright reflector, the basal the permittivity is mostly in the range of 5 to 10, which is typical for terrestrial rocks, whereas inside of the bright reflector, you are well above 15 for the majority of the data. So this was our conclusion. we saw that the bright refractions we were observing, no matter what you think is within the South Polar layer deposits, might not be explained by dry material. We came thus to the conclusion that the only possible explanation for the bright refraction was the presence of liquid water. Thank you. I would like now to leave the floor to Enrico for final remarks.
Well, the final remarks are very simple. Water is there. We have not anymore any doubt. After many years of doubt that we have to remove one after the other up to today.
Well, we'll leave it there, and we're handing over from the space show to Purple Haze. I'm Andrew Rennie.